welcome to Prophecy Girls, a Buffy rewatch podcast.
I'm Kara Babcock, pronouns she, her.
And I'm Stephanie Chow, pronouns she, her.
Join us each week as we break down every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is a spoiler-free podcast.
Whether you're watching for the first time
or longtime fans like us,
we'll be analyzing every episode, character, and storyline like it's our first time, too.
During this rewatch, we'll reminisce about our memories of Buffy,
discuss the show's cultural impact,
and provide honest commentary from a 21st century lens.
Thanks for listening.
Now, on to the episode. Season 7, Episode 7, Conversations with Dead People. Our last Episode 7 episode, Kara.
I was just about to say the same thing.
That makes me a little bit sad, actually. Just a reminder, everybody, I believe back in like Season 2, our longtime listener Annie pointed out to us that every Episode 7 of a season is an important one. It's a game changer in some ways, or important in one way or another. And this episode is no different. This episode stands out.
Exactly. I mean, for people who watched Buffy a fair amount, this episode needs no introduction. It's probably up there with Hush and Once More with Feeling. It's maybe not as well regarded in general, right? It's not one of those standout episodes that people who don't watch Buffy have heard about. But within the series, this episode has received a lot of acclaim. And I think it's deserved. You know, I'm coming right out of the gate saying I'm not going to stand here and argue that this is a bad episode by any means. I think we're going to have a good time talking about this episode. There's definitely a couple of things that I maybe take issue with, even if I just want to poke fun at it. But let's start off, Steph, by celebrating one of the highlights of this episode. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it Donita?
That's not what I was referring to, but you are correct. Mm-hmm. Dawn is amazing in this episode.
Yes.
No, it's the opposite. It's the lack of something in this episode. It's the absence of something.
Yes, that was one of my notes. Was could this episode be so good because Xander isn't in it? That's a very strong possibility. Also, the fact that we have the return of Joyce in one way or another. What I loved about this episode right off the bat was that tone difference, because you and I, Kara, had quite the time with him, which was the episode right before this, you know, and I love how that episode was so kooky and chaotic and funny. Last week was a rom-com, and then this week we're in a thriller. We're in this drama. We're in an exorcist movie. And I really love that tonal shift. And I think that this episode reminds me how good Buffy can be, you know? And it's just really enjoyable. It's a really great character study in some ways. And like we already said, Dawn shines, Joyce is back, goodbye Xander, Spike doesn't talk. Like, everything's great. So season 7's keeping us on our toes. Are you ready to get into it?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, we open on someone turning on an amp and picking up a guitar, and that's when we get the title card of the episode, which is Conversations with Dead People. And the only other time, correct me if I'm wrong, the only other time that we see a title card in an episode is for Once More with Feeling.
Right, and that one, it makes sense because that episode is being presented to us as a musical. And the title card is highly stylized, like an old film. In this episode, the title card is just white text on a black screen in the Buffy font. It's unremarkable, except for the fact that we never get one.
Right? So I wonder if that's just a way of being like, this is another episode that's going to stand out in some way. Hopefully in a less controversial way than Double Meat Palace did, you know, because that was also a stylized episode. So not only do we get the title, but we also get the date and time. I am grateful. It is November 12th, 2002, and it's 8:01 p.m. And it's really interesting that they did this, because I'm assuming this episode did air. I could easily check, but I'm not going to. I'm assuming this episode aired on November 12th, 2002, which means we're watching it in real time. You know, like, we're watching this as the characters are going through it. And like, what do you think of that? Like, what are we supposed to take away from that?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is the first time. I mean, I guess we had this in Same Time, Same Place, right? But I mean, this is the show finally giving us what we want, Steph. We know what time it is.
Yeah, I love it.
I love it. And yeah, it's interesting to me that once again, they're trying to make it set real time. Like, I think we saw this earlier in the season as well.
Well, I guess that like earlier in, I believe it was Help, that it was Tara's birthday based on when it aired.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what I was talking about. So like they're definitely paying attention to dates in this season. It's interesting. And I like that we know what day it is. You mm-hmm. know, it's November 12th.
Yeah, we don't have to sit back and wonder, is it Saturday? is it noon?
It's a Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. So a singer starts singing a melancholy song as Buffy walks by herself in one of the cemeteries. Spike is drinking alone at the bar. I assume it's the Bronze. And once again, just last week, we were watching teenagers grind it up at the Bronze. So it's inappropriate that Spike's having a drink there. We see that Willow is at UC Sunnydale Library studying, but she's also kind of daydreaming. Looks like she's about to nod off. Dawn comes home and finds a note that says Buffy and Willow will be out late and they left money for her to go to the store. No pizza, it says. And then I laugh because I was like, you guys are going to let Dawn wander the streets at night? Like, you know, like,
pizza
just let
would
her pizza.
Be safer.
Right?
Also, we've seen Dawn's lack of cooking abilities, unless they've improved since we last saw those on display. What is Dawn going to do for food? Is she going to make herself a quesadilla? Because that did not go well last time.
Yeah, Kara, what we didn't get to see is on the other side of the note, it's a specific list of ingredients for the store, and it's quesadilla, peanut butter,
banana.
Jam or whatever. Banana.
It was peanut butter, banana, quesadillas.
Yeah. Yeah. And more pancake mix because this chosen family just makes pancakes all the fucking time. So Buffy is kneeling in front of a tombstone and a hand shoots out of the ground. A vampire is born. Buffy's like, here we go. Cut to credits. So we're with Jonathan and Andrew, who we haven't seen since the end of season 6. They're in a car. Jonathan's saying that he's trying to keep a low pro, right? Because they're driving back into Sunnydale. He says, last time they were here, 33.3% of us were flayed alive. And Andrew says, we've got a plan. We're going to fix all of it. And Jonathan says, we should have just stayed in Mexico. And Andrew says, I didn't like it there. Everyone spoke Mexicoan. And Jonathan says, you could have learned it. You learned the entire Klingon dictionary in 2.5 weeks. Andrew says that had much clearer transitive and intransitive rules. Besides, I can't keep having those nightmares. So just a quick pause here. Isn't it so typical of someone going to another country and then refusing to learn their language because it's too hard?
Well, that also, what languages do they speak in Mexico, Steph?
Not Mexicoan.
Absolutely not. They speak Spanish. I meant to look up the verb transitive and intransitive rules for Klingon because I do have a copy of the Klingon dictionary and I made a note to do it and I forgot. So sorry, listeners, I dropped the ball on this. Maybe I'll look it up later and I'll update you all in the future. Or if somebody else listening to the podcast speaks Klingon, is Andrew correct about the transitive versus intransitive rules? I don't remember. All I really remember is that it's subject, object, verb, I believe, in Klingon. Somebody else can confirm that for us.
Wow. Nerd alert. Jonathan says, me either, about the nightmares. You speak Spanish.
Wait, does Spanish have clear transitive and intransitive rules? I don't know. I don't speak Spanish.
I would love to speak Spanish, though. You know, like I in Canada, we're kind of taught French a little bit.
Somebody who speaks both Spanish and Klingon, please write in contrasting the transitive and intransitive rules of both languages.
We would love that. Andrew translates what Jonathan says in Spanish to, it eats you starting with your bottom. And that made me laugh. I was like, it's just a literal translation. Jonathan says, we're going to make it right. And Andrew says, we're outlaws with hearts of gold. So they drive past the Sunnydale, entering Sunnydale side. So they're back. How do we feel about Jonathan and Andrew coming back?
Jonathan and Andrew, especially Andrew, are the hardest part of this episode for me.
Mm-hmm.
They're similar to how I feel about Xander or Spike, in that every time I watch this series over, my opinion of them is a little less. You know, I feel like, yeah, the more I watch Buffy, the less I like most of these male characters. And maybe that's on purpose. Maybe that's the show working as intended. But like, I used to find Andrew very endearing.
Yes.
And not so much anymore. As was the case in season 6. I'm like, ugh, major creepo. Jonathan for me is different. Jonathan of the trio was the one who actually seemed to have a conscience. You know, actually seemed to give a fuck. He did try helping Buffy a couple of times there. I'm upset with the show for never fully dealing with the whole mind control rape stuff from Superstar.
Mm-hmm.
They just gave him a slap on the wrist, which to me is probably the clearest sign that he is actually one of the Scoobies.
Yeah.
They let him get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if the show had handled his redemption arc a bit better, I'd feel more well-disposed towards Jonathan, because of the three, he's the least noxious and he's the most likely to be redeemed. But I'm getting closer and closer to lumping Andrew in with Warren.
Yeah. Andrew does not come off well in this episode for me at all. I mean, clearly. But like you said, I used to find him very endearing. I used to think he was really funny. I really don't like him. And I started saying this at the end of season 6. Remember, I was like, I don't like Andrew. He's a little weasel. And let's not forget, the reason that they were on the run is for the murder of Katrina. Right? Like, that was the ultimate reason why they had to take off to Mexico. And they say later in this episode, right? Like, oh, I'm not going back to jail, like, blah, blah, blah. So they're here to redeem themselves. They want to be in Buffy's gang, and they don't want to be blamed for what happened to poor Katrina.
Yeah.
That is annoying. So, well, more with them to come. Buffy is fighting with the vampire, and he's doing fairly well for himself. So we cut to Donica, who it definitely ordered pizza, as she should, and disgusting pizza, I'll add, with anchovies on it, because she's singing to herself. She says, anchovies, anchovies, you're so delicious. I love you more than all the other fishes.
It's cute. Really enjoying getting this glimpse of Dawn by herself. Usually we just see Dawn with other people.
Right.
And getting a sense of Dawn's rich inner life, I'm loving it.
And like, who amongst us can't say that they haven't sung to their food? Because we all have. And I'm sorry if you're out there and you're like, I love anchovies. I'm here to tell you they're gross. My father-in-law always gets them, sneaks them onto the pizzas when we order them. And I lose my mind about it. So cut to Dawn trying on Buffy's clothes while she's eating a piece of pizza. She gets a smear on one of the shirts and she goes, oh, well, she'll think it's blood. So we cut to Dawn playing with the weapons from the weapons chest, and she's destroying the house while she's at it, Kara. So she picks up an axe and she like obviously drops it and it makes a mark somewhere. And then she shoots an arrow into a wall and she takes out a chunk of that wall, and then she just covers it with a houseplant. So then she's jamming to music in the kitchen, and the shot of her jamming to music is from the outside of the house. So first we're like, this is so cute. Like, Dawn's just having a little night in. She did enough teenage rebellion to keep her happy for the rest of the night by ordering pizza when she should have went to the store to get quesadilla ingredients. And here she is having a great time. And then all of a sudden we get this feeling that she's being watched because of where the camera's watching her. And it's like, oh,
I also
something's
think
happening.
That this is a sad reminder maybe of what we got up to before we had smartphones to pacify us.
You mean just how we would occupy our time when we didn't have anyone to talk to. Yeah.
Like, if this were being filmed now, Dawn would just be scrolling on her phone right now. But no, she's dancing around the house and trying on her sister's clothes and just like, the older I get, the more of a curmudgeon I'm becoming about smartphones and social media stuff. It was all a mistake. Social media was a mistake. Podcasts were but no, seriously, I think it's so interesting from a cultural point of view that our boredom has become a problem that we seek to solve by scrolling.
How do you not know that she has a webcam pointed at her as she's dancing in the kitchen and she's making the world's first TikTok? You don't know, Kara. Also, you notice how she smeared some pizza on Buffy's shirt there? And she's like, she'll just think it's blood. Well, Dawn, if you're worried about Buffy being pissed off that you ruined her clothes, why don't you go to prophecygirls.ca/store and get yourself a brand new t-shirt with a Prophecy Girls logo on it, or Xander Slander Hate, or maybe even a Praise Moloch logo on it. Get that sent to you. And then give it to Buffy as penance for ruining another one of her shirts.
That is a very good point, Steph. Prophecygirls.ca/store. Anytime you ruin one of your siblings' shirts.
Before we cut away from Dawn, she finds marshmallows and she puts them in the microwave and watches them get big. Also something we've all done, Kara. Like, no one is more relatable in the show than Donovan Summers. So then she hears a loud bang and she looks up. Okay, and I will say it right here. I adore Dawn in this episode. I think her scenes are legitimately terrifying.
Well, I had a note about that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is Dawnifer discrimination right here, because Buffy and Willow get these fairly chill conversations. I realize Buffy has to have a fight, and obviously Willow's also has a dark moment, but like, they're just sitting there for the most part. Meanwhile, Dawn goes through hell, as we're about to discuss.
Yes.
This is discrimination. This is Dawnifer discrimination.
She can fucking handle it. That's what the episode shows us, is that Dawn is a fucking boss. But it starts off with this loud bang. And I've already talked about how loud bangs really upset me. And hearing that loud bang, I was like, oh no, this episode. And I will also add that I love a spooky movie. I love ghost stories and I love exorcism movies. And that's exactly what this kind of was to me. So it starts.
Cut to Willow writing in the UC Sunnydale library. And then we see Cassie from Help emerge from behind the bookcase. She says, so this is the UC library, huh? It's so big. And Willow says, I know you. I mean, I saw your picture. And Cassie says, I know, it's kind of weird because we never really met. And Willow says, or kind of weird because you're really dead. Did I fall asleep? And Cassie says, no, I'm here. Well, not really here. It's kind of complicated. Kind of ironic too, you know. I write all that intense poetry about the end and here I am again, chatting you up. Willow says, yeah, ironic. And Cassie sits across from Willow and says, she asked that I come talk to you. It's important. And Willow is like, who asked you? What are you talking about? And Cassie says she still sings. Remember that time on the bridge when we sang to each other? It's our second Once More With Feeling reference this season.
Mm-hmm.
She says, even though you can't hear it, she still sings to you. And Willow is about to lose her shit because she says, Tara?
So I love that they brought Cassie back for this conversation, because I think
why it's because, as Willow points out here, they hang a lampshade on it. Willow has no connection to Cassie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's curious, like, why is Cassie here? Why not Tara? If I remember correctly, and I'm just mentioning this because otherwise I know we'll get a ton of hot stakes, I believe they weren't able to get Amber Benson back in to do it.
Yeah, the scheduling conflict
and
or something.
So my
yeah.
guess would be they just loved Azura Sky's performance so much that they're like, okay, Cassie's the one. Let's get her back. That's my guess. It's interesting to me that they're like, let's pair her with Willow and not somebody like Buffy.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense to add Cassie in. Maybe that's why they gave her the supernatural ability and Help, right? Maybe that's why they wrote Help at all, was to have a reason for her to come back and have it be believable in some way. I think that it's fascinating, and this show is so good after the last seven seasons of making us question what's going on because it's a supernatural show. So the very first scene of Willow in this episode, it looked like she was gonna fall asleep. So when she says here, did I fall asleep, it, like, we could all be really thinking that, right? Like, oh, she's dreaming, right? And that's a very legitimate question to ask as an audience member, is like, did Will actually fall asleep? Is this actually happening to her? So I like that element to the scene. And then, yeah, of course, the mention of Tara. And I've been bitching all season about how we're not getting enough of Willow's grief, of Willow's dealing with what happened to her last season, with what happened to Tara. So getting a little taste of that in this episode, I really, really liked. Dawn is watching a horror movie while eating the marshmallow, and she's talking to Kit. Oh my God, Kit's still in the picture. She's talking to Kit on the phone, and then she hears the loud bang again. So Dawn's explaining to Kit that she keeps hearing this noise, and she mutes the TV. She walks to the door, and the front door blows open with this huge gust of wind, and Dawn screams, and she shuts the door, and then she hangs up the phone, and then the TV unmutes itself. So Dawn unplugs it because it's really loud, but it keeps playing. Like, it doesn't turn off. So Buffy is fighting the vampire. She does one flippy-do, from what I saw, that he's choking her. And then he's like, Buffy? Buffy Summers? And he lets go of her. He's like, it's Webbs. Holden Webster. We went to school together. European history? I let you crib off my Vaclav Havel essay that one time. You really don't remember? And Buffy's like, sure.
Awkward.
So back to the living room, okay? The stereo turns on, as does the radio in the kitchen. Dawn is so spooked, she takes a bat and breaks every electronic and shelf that Xander built in the living room. And
this is so bad. Like, the amount of destruction that this house undergoes in this episode.
Yeah, but what I want to say, you're right, Kara. By the end of this episode, the house is destroyed. At least the aesthetic inside of the house. But what I wanted to point out was that Dawn was destroying the house long before the manifestations began. Like, she was already playing with the weapons and making quite the mess. So she goes to the kitchen, and the microwave has turned on by itself, and then it explodes, and glass shards fly everywhere. And we see that Dawn is in bare feet. And let it be known, Dawn is the only character on this entire show who doesn't wear shoes in the house. Like, she is a normal person and took off her shoes and is walking around her house barefoot or in socks, like a sane person. So, but unfortunately for her, that means she's stepping on glass. Suddenly, we hear Joyce Summers' voice on the stereo saying, Dawn? And Dawn is like, Mom? So, the vampire is telling Buffy that he did the lighting design for the spring production of Pippin. And Buffy's like, I didn't see it. And he's like, you helped me move the lighting board and dropped it on my foot. And Buffy's like, right, your foot. Yeah, of course. It's all coming back. Sorry. And it like, I don't think it's true. It's, I think Buffy, yeah, Buffy has no clue, guys. So he says, it's not like it was a big part of your life or anything. And Buffy's like, I didn't recognize you with the face, you know, all demon-y, and you filled out a lot. And he's like, oh yeah, I got into Taekwondo in a big way back at Dartmouth. And Buffy's like, that's great. What have you been up to? And Holden's like, well, apparently dying. And then they both laugh. I love this example of small talk, Kara. So he says, no, but other stuff. Majoring in psych, really liking that. Took a year off to do an internship at the Sunnydale Mental Hospital. Kara, did we know that there was a Sunnydale Mental Hospital?
I suspect that what happened was they had to open it last year after the events of season 5. Oh. They're like, okay, we need a hospital to house all these people. Now, obviously, we assume those people got better after the destruction of Glory, but they didn't know that at the time. So they were busy building this hospital while, you know, this epidemic was happening in season 5.
That makes so much sense, because remember in season 5, when Glory hit up all those people, they were all just crammed in a room in the hospital and forgotten about. Yeah. So Holden morphs back into his human face, and Buffy explains that he can go back and forth as a vampire. And he says, I'm a vampire. How weird is that? And Buffy's like, sorry. And he's like, no, it feels great, strong. Like, I'm connected to a powerful, all-consuming evil that's going to suck the world into a fiery oblivion. Buffy says, not so much connected. And Holden says, I mean, the stake at the cross. Like, do you do this thing a lot? And Buffy says, I'm the slayer. It's sort of a thing. And he's like, you fight slayers professionally? And she's like, well, I don't get paid. Boo. She says, like, it's more of a calling since school. And he says, oh, I heard rumors about you back then. You were all mysterious. And she was never around. And he says, a lot of kids thought you were dating some really old guy or that you were heavy religious. And I laughed at that because, like, clearly Buffy had her cross with her, right?
Just assumed. And then he says,
Scott Hope said you were gay. Who?
I forgot. Like, I've watched this episode before. I totally forgot they bring up Scott Hope. And I'm just like, what a blast from the past. But also, what happened to Owen?
Well, remember I brought up Owen last week? I was like, because I said RJ reminded me of Owen. Okay, so Buffy says, what? I dated that ringworm. Holden says, he says that about every girl he breaks up with. And then last year, big surprise, he comes out.
Well, good. Ooh, for him.
Good. Okay. So Buffy says, men, do I know how to pick them? And Holden says, so all this time you were a slayer. And Buffy says, as in like the only one. And Holden says, huh, so when you said not connected, that was kind of a telling statement. And Buffy's like, what I really need is emotional therapy from the living dead. And Holden says, it was your phrase. Buffy says, I'm connected to a lot of people, okay? And as they're chatting, we see that Buffy has dropped her cell phone during their fight, and it's ringing because Dawn has been calling her.
I just want to add, Buffy's outfit is so cute and so practical. I'm here for this era of practical slaying outfits.
Yeah, she's not here trying to impress sexy, broody vampires that she might happen upon as she's as she's patrolling. Those days are long.
Do you need a moment with that fantasy?
This was probably the same cemetery where her and Angel made out during Bad Eggs. Those were the days.
I'm impressed you remember the episode title.
Of course I do, Kara.
It's word into your brain. I get it. Okay.
And also the fact that like they all said, like you said earlier, right? There was a rumor that you're dating this old guy. Like it's, yeah, that's the population was right for once, you know?
Or no, I thought that was Giles, but I guess Angel makes sense. Yeah.
You thought it was Giles?
I always saw her with Giles.
She did get into Giles' car during school hours a lot. And she used to work out in his office. So that does make sense.
It really, like, we did touch on this briefly when we talked about seasons 1 to 3, but they really walked a line there.
Like, we never saw it really anytime after that. Maybe a couple times. But remember the pilot? Giles was all over her. Like he was so close to her and talking up in her face, in her space. And you and I were like, back up. Like, we're like, no touchy.
Oh, dear. So Dawn is trying to call Buffy, and she's bandaging up her bleeding foot. And my question for you is, why doesn't she try calling Willow or Xander?
Well, I mean, Xander goes without saying, what's he going to do? She needs powerful help here. I in my head canon, she did try calling Willow, but that's why it's like maybe Willow's in a dream. Maybe she's asleep.
Yeah, I don't expect us to have a proper answer. That was a point I wanted to make. So Dawn holds up the stereo and she's like, do it again. I heard you. But then we see a shot behind Dawn of the couch with Joyce's dead body lying there, just like the episode The Body.
I legit jumped. I was not expecting that. Yeah, I was like, oh my god. And like her eyes are open but they're all glassy and white. And did the costume department, do they just hold on to every single costume until the show ends? Like do they just never throw them out?
I don't think they like hold on to it necessarily, but they reuse a lot of costumes. Right. So like if you pay attention to the show, you'll see like different monsters of the week will have like different combinations of outfits and stuff. It all kind of adds up to different outfits. The costuming department is very resourceful at reusing things.
I will accept that.
Yeah. So I think that in this case, they probably had the outfit. You know, maybe they've used that top or that skirt before, or, you know, maybe it was like part of the larger costuming warehouse for the show. It's not like every single show at 20th Century Fox has its own like dedicated costume warehouse. Obviously, they'll have specific costumes for the show, but there, you know, there's the larger warehouse you can draw from. Anyway, so Dawn turns to look at the couch, but the body's gone. She stares at the spot where it just was. The lights go out, then the lights come back on, and all the chairs are upside down. The weapons trunk is turned over, and there is a bloody message on the wall with a bloody handprint that says, Mother's milk is red today. And then the lights go out again. There's another bang. And then everything's back to normal.
Spooky, spooky. I love it.
The loud banging continues. Dawn screams, "Why are you doing this? I don't understand. Stop it. Stop it. And she screams again. And then the banging stops. And Dawn stands up and says, "Hello?" Another bang. Dawn says, "Okay. Once for yes, twice for no. Mom?" One bang. "Mom, it's you?" One bang. Dawn smiles. And she says, "Are you okay?" And there's two bangs. Dawn says, "You're not. Mom? Mommy? Are you alone?" Two bangs. And the house starts shaking. Picture frames fall off the wall. Lights explode. Dawn screams again, "Why are you doing this?"
Ooh, poor Donnie. So we cut to Jonathan, who's shimmying down on a rope, like Mission Impossible style, into the school library. Andrew falls down behind him, and they're now wandering the halls of the school, and they hear a clatter. Jonathan's like, "Maybe we should go get Buffy. We should tell her what we know about the Steal of Dan Zelthar." And Andrew says, "Think, McFly," and that made me laugh because it's a Back to the Future reference. He's like, "Think, McFly, why would you believe us? Why would she believe us without any proof? We go to her empty-handed and we'll be cooling our heels in the clink in a Bell's microsecond."
I love how they felt they had to enter the school from the roof. Like, why don't you just break in through one of the many doors?
Okay, but this is Jonathan and Andrew to a T. Remember back in season 6, which episode was it? It was the Freeze Ray episode, so it must have been Smashed, when they shimmy down into the museum using those things, and Warren, I think, just walks in. Or I think Andrew does it, and like Warren and Jonathan just walk in. So they just like playing with the tech, right? So Jonathan says, "I'm not going back to the big house. That place changes a man." So again, these two spent a total of what, 10 hours at the jail?
Probably less.
Before they were broken out. And like, just a reminder, they were there because they murdered Katrina. And Katrina deserves justice. So Andrew says, "That's why we need proof. Think of it as a trial by fire, a quest, uno questa. We find it and we alert the slayer. We help her destroy it. We save Sunnydale. Then we join her gang and possibly hang out at her house." And Andrew says, "We should find the principal's office and find our way from there." So they're going to split up and look. And before they go, they check the communications, which is their walkie-talkies. And they just go back and forth with like, check, 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 check. And then as they're walking away, Jonathan says, "Do you think they're really going to let us join their gang?" And Andrew just shrugs. So Jonathan turns a corner, and then Warren walks out from behind Andrew, and he's like, "Nice job." Andrew says, "There you are. I'm scared out of my freaking gourd here. Do you have any idea how hard it's been to act this cool?" And Warren says, "Calm down. You're doing great. All specs are within parameters." And Andrew says, "You keep leaving me. I hate when you leave me. One time you died and I ended up a Mexican." And Warren says, "That whole death thing was all part of the master plan. If you strike me down," and Andrew finishes the quote and says, "I shall become more powerful than you could possibly imagine, of course." And he says, "Do you think Willow could kill me too?" And Warren says, "If Short Round can pull off his end of the bargain, we'll both become gods." And Andrew just stares after Jonathan and says, "That boy is our last hope." And Warren says, "No, there is another." And Andrew's like, "Really? Who's our last hope?" And Warren's like, "No, I was just going with it. It was a thing. He's our last hope."
This is simultaneously creepy and incredibly amusing.
Warren, or this version of Warren, is so creepy in this episode. Like,
shout out to Adam Bush for being so good at being funny creepy, right? Like, the chemistry between Andrew and Warren, their nerd sensibilities, there's something very appealing about it. And this is probably why I used to find Andrew so endearing. And Warren, if you're not in the middle of him having a misogynistic rant moment, mm-hmm. Warren can be funny because he's clever. And then you realize, wait a minute, he's also a misogynistic rapist murderer. And you're like, Oh, yeah.
But that's still a good line,
this moment,
though.
Right? I can almost kind of forget about that and be like, ha ha, this is funny. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
tricked me again. But that's like so many male characters in this series, right? Like, oh, you're so funny. Right. But that's also Joss Whedon to a T, is it not? Like, wow, what a talented writer. What a funny man. But then it's like, So I thought that line was funny, right? Just, wait, really? Who's absolutely our last hope? So in the library, Willow's saying, Tara, is it you? And Cassie says, she's sorry she couldn't come herself because of what you did. You killed people. You can't see her. It's just how it is. I'm sorry. And Willow says, but she's talking to you so, and she can hear me. Tara, Tara, I miss you. I miss you so much. Can you hear me? And Cassie nods, but she's frowning. And Willow's like, what's happening? Did she say anything? Cassie says, she's crying. Willow starts crying too. And Cassie says, she misses you too. She wishes she could touch you. And Willow's crying. She says, it hurts so much. Every day it's like a giant hole. It's not getting better. And Cassie says, it will. It can. And Willow says, how? You're gone. And Cassie says, you're not. You're strong. Like an Amazon, remember? And Willow smiles and she says, I remember. This hurts. This hurts a lot. Because on one hand, you could be like, this is the sweetest. The fact that Tara from the dead is talking to Willow, making her feel good. Right? Making her feel better while she's crying. But then what we know about the scene later, it's like, ooh, this is so dark. This is so mean. So Spike is still drinking at the bar. A blonde lady approaches him and puts a packet of cigarettes or darts or whatever you want to call them in front of him. And she sits with him to have a drink.
Email us your region's cigarette slang.
I've always hated the term dart for cigarettes, but that I grew up with that. That's hey, you want to go outside for a dart?
The Thunder Bay thing?
Yeah. And I'd be like, no, I don't exactly smoke. What you mean.
Yeah, it gets on my nerves too.
Yeah, it's annoying. So Buffy is now lying on a long tombstone, like it's a therapist couch, right? Like she's getting a therapy
got a
session.
Headrest.
Yeah, she's chilling out, and Holden's sitting next to her, like he's listening to her because he is. And finally, Kara, it took 7 years, but we got Buffy to therapy in some way, shape, or form.
We love to see it. Hey, I'm pro therapy, and whatever kind of therapy is going to work for you. If Buffy's therapy is talk therapy with the undead, I'm here for it.
Right? Anything counts, in my opinion. So she says relationships never last. And Holden says, do you mean relationships or just yours? And Buffy says, my parents were the paragon of stay togetherness. Maybe that's part of it. But I think there are people out there who can make it. It just, I target the impossible ones with deadly accuracy. And Holden asks her if she does that on purpose to protect herself. And Buffy says, from heartbreak, misery, sexual violence, and possible death, not so much. And Holden says, from committing. And Buffy sits up. She's like, I commit. I'm committed. I'm a committee. And Holden says, so it's them. You're reaching out and they're just not coming through. And Buffy says, I think you're confusing me because you're evil. So Holden says, I think you're just in pain here, which I do kind of enjoy because I'm evil now. But you should just ease up on yourself. It's not as if you have the patent on bad relationships. Are you supposed to be settling down at 21? My girlfriend at college, she's so sweet, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go vampify her so we could be together forever.
I'm loving the whole, and I'm evil now, shtick that's going on here. I think it's great how he's just embracing it.
Yes, and this actor's name is Jonathan Woodward, and he's amazing in this episode. And I forgot that it was him because what I know Jonathan from, minor spoiler, is from Angel. Mm-hmm. Like that's how I know this actor.
And he shows up in Firefly as well. Joss Whedon likes to reuse his actors.
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing here? But he does such a good job as this character because this vampire, like, he's like, oh yeah, I'm evil.
It's the whole affable evil thing, right? Like if we're looking at through the funhouse mirror, right? We have Warren is one type of evil. And this guy is another type of evil, and they're both, you know, they have their appeal, they have their charm. What I like about this is how he's just so matter-of-fact about it, right? Like, he's talking to Buffy and therapizing her.
Yeah.
And then he's just once in a while casually throwing in the reminder that, yeah, I'm evil, and I know it, and I'm all good with that.
I wish we get more of him. You know what I mean? Like, he's giving me the same vibes that Mr. Trick used to give me.
Do you want him to become a nemesis? Is that what you want?
A nemesis, yes. That would be amazing. Well, we can talk more about him as the episode goes on, but I really enjoy the scene. I enjoy what this actor is doing with this character. Buffy says, "Sire, when you turn a human into a vampire, you sire them. It's a noun." And Holden says, "I have so much to learn. Isn't this insane? I was afraid to talk to you in high school, and now we're like mortal enemies. Wouldn't it be so cool if we became nemeses? We're going to have to fight to the death, aren't we?" And Buffy's like, "It's a time-honored custom." Holden says, "Wow. Reality just shows up sometimes, doesn't it? But, you know, I got the bloodlust pumping and I kind of get it. It's not personal." And Buffy's like, "Oh, no, no, you've been great." And Holden's like, "It's fun catching up, but I've never kept in touch with any of my friends from high school. Guess I'll be looking them up soon." And he like laughs. And Buffy's just like, "Yeah." And he's like, "I don't mean to be Count Butinsky here, but you don't seem as thrilled because we're going to fight." And Buffy's like, "It's because I'm going to win." And Holden just laughs. He's like, "Hello, 2 years of Taekwondo and vampire strength. I think somebody's counting their chickens." So Buffy says, "You're not leaving the graveyard. I can't let you." And he says, "Does the word superiority complex mean anything to you?" And Buffy says, "Do you think I'm going to go let you just kill a bunch of people? You know I'm sworn to." And Holden cuts her off. He's like, "No, no, no. I get the battle against evil. That's not the issue here." And Buffy's like, "Don't issue me." He says,
"Love that line.
Just answer me this. Whose fault was your parents' divorce?" And Buffy's like, "Okay, this is beyond evil. This is insane troll logic."
Another reference. I love it.
So she says, "What do my parents have to do with this?" And Holden says, "Just curious." And they sit down together now. And Buffy says, "My dad, he cheated. I think he cheated."
Oh, he totally cheated?
Hank fucking would. So Holden says, "Of all these relationships of yours that you knew subconsciously were totally doomed, whose fault is that? Is it possible, even a little bit, that the reason you have trouble connecting to guys is because you think maybe they're not worth it? Maybe you think you're better than them." And Buffy says, "There's the bloodlust I was looking for." And he's like, "Well, I struck a nerve." And she says, "I'm going to strike a nerve cluster in a minute if you don't get off this. I don't remember you being this annoying." And he's like, "You don't remember me at all." So fair. Good. Yeah. Buffy's like, "Yes, I do." And he's like, "Yeah, after 30 minutes of rewinding. And I don't take it personally because clearly you're in your own world in high school, all chosen, all destiny. Who could live with that for 7 years and not feel superior?" And Buffy's like, "I'm not. If you knew what I've done, what I've let myself become, my best friends don't even, like, you'd laugh if you heard some of the things that I'd done to them." And Holden's like, "Buffy, I'm here to kill you, not to judge you." Brilliant. And Buffy says, "The last guy I was with I behaved like a monster. I treated him like, and at the same time, I let him completely take me over, do things to me. That." And then she sniffles and she says, "Sorry, I didn't mean to get all true confessions on you. What's wrong with me?" So can we pause for a second? Okay, I'm not going to rant about this episode. I just want to point out that, remember last episode in Him, I had an epic rant about how they rewrite the script, about how it's Buffy sabotage, and how I didn't like the language they're giving to Buffy around what happened last year. Not just with the rape, but with the lead up to the rape, with the abusive relationship, right? And here they're doing it again, in my opinion. Buffy says, "I behaved like a monster. I treated him poorly." And she's taking all the blame for everything. And, you know, it's not consistent, because last season she was feeling bad for using Spike. Mm-hmm. But she's making herself out to be the abuser in this relationship. And I just can't.
I mean, so counterpoint, I agree with you that she's not. But I think it makes a lot of sense the way that Buffy's processing all of that, because she was in a dark place last season and her relationship with Spike was unhealthy. And although Buffy was not an abuser in that relationship, she was not the abusive one, she did participate in unhealthy behavior that, you know, I was calling it a form of self-harm, right? That wasn't a good relationship for her. Mm-hmm. So I think her thoughts in this matter, like the way that she's processing it right now, I think it makes a lot of sense. I agree with you. It's not an accurate description of what happened. But since when are our feelings 100% objective, accurate descriptions of reality?
That's fair. And I'm also tagging this on to something that she says later in the episode. So maybe it's a little bit too soon to be having this conversation. But later when she again makes excuses for Spike, like he loved me. Just like in last episode when she was saying, it's different now. He's got a soul. He felt really bad. He left. It's not his fault. It's mine.
Riley had a soul, Buffy.
Buffy, I'm glad that she's here processing everything. I'm glad that she's going through it. And I, just like we said last episode, I can appreciate that it's complicated. But I'm just going to continue riding this train, Kara, all the way through if they're going to continue giving her this language around what happened last season. That is inaccurate because you can't gaslight me. I spent two seasons watching Spike stalk, sexually assault an abuser, and I will not allow Buffy to take all responsibility for it.
Yeah, like on the one hand, I want to, you know, pull Buffy aside and be like, oh, Buffy, girl, like, yeah. But at the same time, I just want to hold space for Buffy and I want to let her speak her truth and speak about things the way she wants to speak about it. And I just don't want to be too harsh on her for doing that, even if I disagree with how she's framing it.
Yeah. It's like I've on one arm, I've got Buffy cuddled up against me. I'm snuggling her. I'm saying, Buffy, you're going through it. You're still going through it. And I'm just going to rock you as you process what you need to process. In the other arm, I'm strangling the writers for what they're doing. So while Buffy is sad and vulnerable, Holding grabs a stone, an angel stone off of a tombstone, and says, there's nothing wrong with you. And then he hits Buffy so hard across the head with it. She falls back. He jumps over the tombstone on top of her and says, everyone's got issues. And he goes to bite her.
That would have knocked out Giles or Xander.
It wouldn't have killed them, which we, it definitely should have.
It wouldn't have a concussion, but they would be conveniently knocked out.
Yes. Actually, yeah, you're right, because Gwendolyn Post did exactly that to Giles.
I'm just saying, on like the scale of head trauma in the show, right? Like, obviously Buffy is fine because she's the Slayer, but anybody else in the show, that would take him out.
Yeah, for sure. So Buffy manages to throw him off and they start to fight. She says, you son of a bitch, I think I'm going to kill you just a little bit more than usual. And as they're fighting, he's like, come on, we had a moment, you opened up, it was really sweet and it made me want to bite you. I'm sorry if I overstepped my boundaries. I'm not used to the whole mortal enemy stuff. So he kicks her in the face and he's like, pretty fast learner though, right? And he's like, just like a taekwondo stance. And she tackles him through a stained glass window into some mausoleum that's nearby.
So Dawn is standing in the dark saying, I hear you breathing. And we can hear growling and pacing around her. She says, are you hurting my mother? Are you keeping her from coming back to me? And there's a quick flash of light and we see Joyce's dead body on the couch again. Dawn says, Mom, I see you. I'm coming towards you. So she's trying to move towards the couch. There's another flash of light. Joyce's dead body is now screaming because a demon is choking her. And Dawn says, she's trying to talk to me. Get off her and let her talk to me. A third flash of light. No one's on the couch anymore. Dawn says, the axe, and goes to the weapons trunk. But the axe swings at her face. She dodges it and she runs towards the front door. And a male voice rumbles, get out. Excuse me? That's Dawn's line? That's rude. You can't steal her line. Dawn opens the door. There's a gust of wind. And she says, no. And she slams the door shut. And she says, she's my mother. I'm staying.
Wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I just love Dawn. She's so good. This is so good. So before we get back to Dawn, we have to go to Andrew and Jonathan, who found the basement, and Jonathan is looking at a map, and this is why it's so creepy. Andrew looks over, and Warren is standing by the door, which is where they need to go, and Andrew says, there it is. Jonathan looks, but he can't see Warren, but he's still standing there, so Andrew can see him, and it's so creepy the way he's standing there. So they go through the door and there's a dirt floor. And Jonathan's like, I think you're right. I think this is where we need to be. So he says, if this lines up, then what we're looking for should be right under there. So he takes out a pitchfork and they start to dig. Buffy ends up on top of Holden with a stake. And she says, you're dead. Is that enough of a moment for you? And Holden goes back to his human face and says, okay, but are you killing me because I'm evil or because you opened up? And Buffy gets up. She's frustrated. She kicks him in the face. She's like, what is wrong with you? He says, nothing. I got no worries. I'm dead. The biggest thing on my mind is whether or not Trisha Waldman came to my funeral or not. You remember her? Oof. Biteable. So Buffy's like, this is what I hate about you vampires, okay? Sex, death, love, and pain. It's all the same damn thing to you. And Holden starts to say that that's a guy thing. And Buffy's like, no, it's not the same. Vampires are completely, like, believe okay. me, I know.
Can we talk about that for a moment?
Yeah.
I thought that was such an interesting observation. And the show just kind of says it and then just leaves it. But I think it's true. The vampire thing, not the guy thing. I think it's true. I think this is probably one of the overriding characteristics of vampires in this show. Because they don't have their soul, they're in this kind of constant state of being fueled by their passion without any restraint that their conscience provides. So to them, having sex is the same rush as killing, as loving, as being in pain. And that's why you see, you know, vampires like Drusilla and Spike and Angelus and Darla, like, they're enjoying the pain play and the blood play and the torture. And to them, it's just as arousing as sex, because since they don't have a conscience anymore, there's no voice in their head saying, yeah, it's great if you have sex with somebody else who's consenting, but maybe you shouldn't kill people. Right? Like,
yeah.
To them, with that voice removed, all they get is the thrill of it, which I think is fascinating. I am with Buffy on this. I don't think this is a guy thing. I think, you know, that's a fun and cheap joke that the writers threw in there. But I don't think Holden's correct there. Obviously, some men can be very boorish in their behavior. But I think we've seen in our own lives and even on this show, examples of masculinity like Giles, where that's not the case. Right. So, sorry, Holden, but you can't use your gender to excuse your bad behavior.
Yeah, and I also think that makes a lot of sense with what you're saying here, because vampires, as you notice, couple up so often, right? They might exchange couples often, but like they tend to be searching for mates, and that goes along with this whole sex, love, death, pain thing. And some vampires handle it better than others. Clearly Spike loses his mind when he doesn't have his partner with him, right? So Holden says, oh my god, not my god, because I defy him and all his works. Does he exist? Is there any word on that, by the way? And Buffy's like, nothing solid. So he's just like, okay, I keep getting off topic. My mind is racing. I'll make a deal with you. You have to answer one question. And if I'm right, I get to ask anything. No secrets, no defensiveness, anything I want to know. And Buffy's like, what's your question? And he says, your last relationship, was it with a vampire? So I want to say, you're wrong again, Holden. It was not a relationship. It was a situationship. And that's different. As much as the show wants us to forget.
Splitting hairs, Steph.
Lest we forget, Buffy was not in a relationship with Spike.
50% of Buffy's sexual partners have been vampires at this point.
I'm doing mental math. It takes a while for me. But I was also, for a hot second there, I was going to count RJ. I was like, didn't she do him in the classroom? But like, no. I don't think she did. You are correct in that for sure. But that doesn't mean that 50% of her relationships, like, she's banged two vampires and she's banged two humans, but she's only had two boyfriends, and that's Angel and Riley. So that's 50-50 still, but like, the show is gaslighting me, Kara. You are gaslighting me, and I won't have it. Not in my house, miss. Let's cut to Spike, who's walking home with this woman from the bar. Now we're back at Willow, who is saying that, like, given, I don't know, she's telling Cassie what happened, like, Warren shot you, it was horrible, I was horrible, I lost myself, the regular me. Cassie says, you were grieving. Willow says, a lot of people grieve, they don't make with the flaying. I hurt so many people. And Cassie says, it was the power. Willow says, I am the power, it's in me. Did I mention the random destruction of property? The magic box is not so much a box now. And Cassie says, the power is bigger than you are. Things are more clear where Tara is, where we are. We can see your path and you have to stop. You can't use magic again. Not ever. Willow says, black magic, of course. Magic's with a K, of course. Giles says, it's not as simple as just quitting it all cold turkey. And Cassie says, it's too dangerous. You can't take the chance that you'll lose control. Willow says, I don't want to. I can't. I never want to cause that kind of pain. So I won't. I'm going to be okay. Cassie says, you're not going to be okay. You're going to kill everybody. Chills. So Jonathan and Andrew are almost done uncovering whatever it is they're digging up. Jonathan is saying, I hope Buffy knows how to destroy it. Then he remembers his locker combination. And Andrew's like kind of like scolds him, saying like, I've spent the last few years trying to forget about high school. Why are you trying so hard to remember it? And Jonathan has this little moment where he's like, I miss it. Time goes by and everything drops away. All the cruelty, all the pain, all the humiliation, it all washes away. I miss my friends. I miss my enemies. I miss the people I talk to every day. I miss the people I never knew existed. I miss them all. And Andrew appears to be listening, but really what he's doing is he's looking at Warren, who's standing behind Jonathan, grinning evilly. It's so creepy. I get chills. Jonathan says, I want to talk to them, find out what's going on with their lives. And Andrew says, they don't want to talk to you. All those people you just mentioned, not one of them is sitting around saying, wonder what Jonathan's doing right now. Not one of them cares about you. And Jonathan says, well, I still care about them. That's why I'm here. So they keep digging and we see that they have uncovered some sort of seal, like a round giant, it looks like a giant plate. And there's like a bull or on it. How would you describe that? Is it like a Satan?
Yeah, image? Was it not a goat?
Maybe it was a goat. Yeah.
Somebody's going to correct us on this.
But yeah, clearly Jonathan has really found Jesus while they're in Mexico. He's just like, I'm a saint now. I want to save people that I used to hate.
Was this thing here the whole time?
The seal?
We've never seen this on the Hellmouth before. Did somebody just install that last week? Like, was this part of the construction?
Yeah, why did Xander and his team put that in?
He's like, So let's take a small moment. I'm sure this is going to be talked about later in another episode. But okay, so the Hellmouth is a physical mouth, like a physical portal to other demon dimensions. And so various entities have tried opening it at various times. And in season 2, right, with Bad Eggs?
You bet. Our second mention of Bad Eggs.
In season 2, right, we saw that the Bazaar lives under the school, like near the Hellmouth. And there was another demon when the Master was opening the Hellmouth in season 1. There was another demon coming out of it they had to fight, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see the show's explanation for like, what is this seal? Is this seal on top of the Hellmouth? Or is it like next to the Hellmouth as like a vent of some kind that you can open to relieve pressure? I don't know. I'm curious because this is the first time in all of the Hellmouth lore that we're learning about this seal, and I want to know what's up.
It's got a name, the Seal of Danzelthar, because Jonathan said that earlier.
Andrew's an unreliable narrator. I don't know if that's true.
Who can say?
He might just be making it up, because it feels like basically what we've learned in this episode is that Andrew has told Jonathan a story that he's concocted with Warren, Ghost Warren, mm-hmm. That they're going to be heroes for saving Sunnydale by going and uncovering the seal and doing something to it, mm-hmm. and then telling Buffy and bragging about it. But like, all we know is that a seal exists. Everything else that Andrew has told Jonathan, including the name of the seal, could be entirely fabricated. I'm just saying,
we don't trust these guys.
Back to the Summers residence, or what's left of it. The demon that we can't see is growling, and Dawn has lit candles and is sitting on the floor, and she's got a spell book open. Her legs are crossed. She's about to do some witchcraft.
Ooh.
She says, I know you're there. I will cast you out. My mother needs to talk to me. She throws dust all around, because this is the only thing she has seen Willow and Buffy and everybody else who does spells do, which is dust everywhere, red sand on all of the carpets. Something pushes her all the way back into the wall, but she keeps throwing dust or sparkles, as Steph says in her notes. And Dawn says, I cast you from this place. It is your poison and your bane. Something scratches her across the face, and she says, it's the skin that is cut from your flesh. She squeals as wind swirls around her. The windows explode.
I love this. I mean, we're going to see more of her doing this in a little bit, but like, just think about this. Dawn is 16, maybe 15 or 16 at this point. She's already brought Joyce back from the dead once. She's done witchcraft before, but
is
like,
Dawn the most powerful witch of the show?
Because we cannot underestimate her, because Willow was barely floating pencils at this point. Like, she, by the time she was in grade 12, she was like struggling with pencil floats. Here's Dawn just going at it with the dark magic, casting out a demon so she can speak to her mother.
She's casting a literal get out, get out, get out spell. It is so fucking on brand. I love it so much.
I actually believe that she's making it up as she goes. Oh, she's like, this is my organic spell.
How hard can this be? I've seen Willow do this all these times. I mean, I also assume that she's got confidence and background from her months now as research girl, right?
Like, yes.
For all we know, Dawn has been reading books about magic just on her off time, right? Like, it sounds like Dawn is one of those people who maybe she doesn't do well in much of school. Like, she's really smart and she's very book smart. She's very good at studying, but she's only good at studying if she's interested in the topic. So it's like, you know, calculus, doesn't care. European history, doesn't care. Magics with a K? Gnarl?
Gnarl.
Oh, she's into that.
I also think that it's so endearing for Dawn, but it's also very heartbreaking that it's her love for her mother, her deceased mother, that inspires this type of supernatural heroics from her. Or I guess you couldn't call her bring her back from the dead heroics, but like a motivation for her to reach out or connect to her mother from beyond. It seems to be the only thing that motivates her to do dark magic. And again, it's heartbreaking. It's obviously misguided, not in this case because she needs it, but I don't know. It was just something really endearing about that to me. So Buffy's sitting next to Holden again, and she says, "The joke is he loved me in his own sick, soulless way. He really did care for me, but I didn't want to be loved."
I'm sorry. Because I agree with you, Steph. Like, I see everything you're saying here. I totally get where you're coming from. And I'm just trying to like hold on and be a little bit more charitable towards the show, and maybe it doesn't deserve it. But
no, and this is, I'm afraid that I'm turning into a broken record. I'm afraid that people are going to be like, oh my God, like they're getting so like, just let it happen.
I don't think it's news that we're anti-Spike on this or anti-Spuffy on this podcast.
But like, for good reason. Like, it's not like I just decided I'm not going to like the guy. I watched him for 2 seasons do terrible, horrible things to my love, Buffy. So for her to sit here and be like, no, he loved me. Mm-mm-mm. Like, I'm the one that did all the wrong here. He had a sick, twisted way of showing it when he had me on my bathroom floor. But mm-hmm. It's me. Mm-hmm. It's so please, people, bear with me when I go into these rants, or when I sigh, or when I roll my eyes, or when I make noises like, ugh. Because I genuinely don't like that they've given these words to Buffy. I think it's unfair to her character. I think it's unfair to her as a victim. And that's why I just come down hard on it. I'm sorry that I'm not changing. This is who I am.
You don't have to apologize. I think that's a very valid perspective.
But like, Kara's is here to be like, let me try softening this a little. Why?
I think I'm just holding on to my anger for more specific moments.
Right. And I'm like I said, I'm on the train. The train's left the station. I'm on my way. Like the anger, let the anger run through me. That's what I'm allowing that to happen. So Holden says, "Didn't you?" And she says, "I have all this power. I didn't ask for it. I don't deserve it. It's like I wanted to be punished. I wanted to hurt like I thought I deserved. I feel like I'm worse than anyone. Honestly, I'm beneath them. My friends, my boyfriends, I feel like I'm not worthy of their love. Because even though they love me, it doesn't mean anything because their opinions don't matter. They don't know. They haven't been through what I've been through. They're not the slayer I am. Sometimes I feel, and this is awful, but I feel like I'm better than them, superior." So Let's unpack this a little bit, okay? So when do you think Buffy started feeling this way? Do you think it was always this way, as Holden suggested earlier in the conversation, in the episode, where he was saying, like, oh, you've always felt like you're better than your boyfriends? Because I don't know if that's true. I think this is a very recent thing for Buffy to be feeling.
See, here's the thing, because this just goes back to what you were just saying about not liking the words that the writers have put into Buffy's mouth in this episode, in these scenes. That's how I kind of feel about this latest line of dialogue. And this was kind of my criticism of this episode. And I don't know if I'm opening up a can of worms here and people are going to jump at me for this, but like, I don't know if I agree with this characterization of Buffy. I think that it's a load of gibberish. I think the writers are just like, how do we portray the complex feelings that Buffy has as the Slayer coming back from the dead, feeling disconnected? And like, I don't envy them. This is complicated stuff. But the whole, like, oh, you have a superiority complex and then you have an inferiority complex of other kind of psycho babble analysis that Holden is doing here. It bothers me that this is how they've chosen to explore it with Buffy. So like, it's hard for me to talk about it and analyze it, because I don't really take it seriously. I think the writers are just like not sure what they're trying to say here.
Well, there's room on this hate train for two, Kara.
I would like to join you, Steph.
Would you like to be my caboose?
I would always like to be your caboose.
That's true friendship right there. Everyone write that down. If your friend doesn't want to be your caboose, fuck them.
I have no idea what this means. I hope this isn't a sex thing.
This is gibberish as well. We're just following the writer's cue, okay?
Let's deal with it one at a time. Superiority. I mean, throughout the show, other people have been telling Buffy she's superior, right? That was Faith's whole thing, is we are better than everybody else. That was Dracula's whole thing. Riley had an inferiority complex because he thought Buffy thought she was superior to him.
Well, she was superior to him.
You're right. Right? Spike was telling her that she's different from everybody else. She's dead. I think Spike's the one who thought that she should be both superior and inferior at the same time. Steph just made a face. As far as inferiority goes, like, I think I get what the writers are going for, which is Buffy feels alone and diminished because she has all of this power. She has the ability to kill vampires and monsters and save the day. But what does she have to show for it in terms of her relationships, right? Her romantic and sexual relationships have largely not been successful for her and often been toxic or harmful. Her friendships are really rocky right now because there's been a lot of issues. Buffy is struggling to point to successful and healthy relationships of any kind that make her feel fulfilled in her life. So if I'm being charitable, that's the reading I can give to this speech. But I think that the way it comes off, like, as much as the rest of this time with Buffy and Holden is fun and funny, and I love the idea that she's being psychoanalyzed, what is actually coming out of her mouth here, I'm not in favor of it.
Yes, I'm with you on that. I think that the show did a lot better in explaining this mindset of Buffy back in Selfless, when she was confronting Xander, or when he was trying to confront her about killing Anya. And remember, she gave that little speech about I am the law, and you and I were totally on her side. We're like, it's true. She's earned that right. She is the Slayer. She's been doing this for 7 years. And it does come down to her to make that decision. So I think the show did a better job of showing, if she does feel superior, why that's true, than what she is saying here, where she's feeling bad about it. As I said earlier, if we are to believe that Buffy feels like she's superior to the people around her, I think it's more true now than it was in seasons 1 to 5. I think that her being brought back from the dead, her friends literally being like, we can't do this without her, and brought her back, I think that is the only thing I can grab onto to believe that Buffy might have developed this idea that, like, maybe I am overall just like a higher being than them. You know, like, and I don't want to say that because I don't think it's very charitable to her character.
Well, and I don't think that's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's the road we're going down this season with Buffy, where, you know, she's no longer feeling like, oh, I'm not good enough for anything, where she's like, well, actually, I'm too good. Like that, like, I mean, I can believe it in that she was brought back from the dead to continue doing a job that she was excelling at. And it's maybe it's getting to her head, or maybe it needs to get to her head for her to continue believing that she has a purpose now. That she has to be here for something.
If we want to expand the analysis along like a gender lens, right? Something that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to this conversation between Buffy and Holden is how earlier in the episode, Buffy's like, I'm going to have to kill you, right? Like she's very sure of herself. And this is something that you and I have noticed throughout season 7 is this is a new Buffy. She has never been more confident in her power as the Slayer. And we're enjoying that. But at the same time, you know, constantly throughout this series, people, especially men, have belittled Buffy and have told her that she's less than and she's not worthy. And, you know, maybe that is what the show is trying to comment on right now with Buffy is this whole thing about how, as women, when we get older and more confident and more secure in our power and our abilities, there's a tendency, thanks to the patriarchy, to try to smack us down and try to make us feel less than so that we don't celebrate our power.
I really hope people write in to tell us what they think about this little scene. I mean, maybe they're like, no, this makes total sense for Buffy. But you and I are coming down on the side of this is a little janky. This is not really consistent with what we know of Buffy.
Like, I know that this episode gets so much praise from fans because of its slightly different format, the fact that it's taking place basically in real time over the course of, you know, an hour on a Tuesday night in November 2002.
And it is compelling. It is compelling storytelling.
Like, yeah, the structure of this episode, the framing is fantastic and it deserves a lot of praise. But I think sometimes, you know, as with Once More with Feeling, as with Hush, you know, with these kind of standout episodes, there's a tendency for us to kind of hold them up as a bit sacred and be like, no, this is a perfect episode. It's so good. And it's like, actually, there are elements of conversations with dead people that are just clunky. And it's there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the writers were trying to do a lot with this episode and they succeeded a lot. But this is just I'm not here for this.
We had a conversation a couple episodes ago about less is more. So I think that they went too far with Buffy's character and that they tried to do something and it confused us. Well, like what? Yeah,
this is a very talky episode, right?
Yeah.
And they cover a lot of kind of character exposition here. But as I think we're going to discover in later episodes, so I don't want to spoil it too much. I think you and I are going to have a conversation in an episode or two about how reliable this exposition was.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait. So Holden says, you feel superior until you can't win. So I thought that he's like, I thought I was diabolical. At least I planned to be. But you do have a superiority complex and you have an inferiority complex about it. Kudos. And Buffy's like, it doesn't make any sense. Holden says, it makes every kind of sense. It all adds up to you being alone. But Buffy, everybody feels alone. Everybody is until you die. Speaking of, he gets up. He like kind of like, you know, loosens up. He's like, ready for our death match? And Buffy's like, I suppose. So she grabs her steak and she stands up. She says, thanks for listening. And he's like, there's some things you just can't, you can only tell a stranger. And Buffy's like, you're not a stranger. And he just grins. And like, this is like a really cute moment between these two, you know? Holden says, that stuff of Spike is pretty. And Holden's like, hold it. Did you just say Spike? Ooh. So Spike is at the woman's apartment now. She's clearly inviting him up.
Back to the get out spell. Dawn has more cuts on her face. The windows have been blown wide open. Poor Xander is going to have to fix up all of those windows.
And the shelves and the picture frames.
Like, I'm just
frames.
Imagining Buffy coming home after her draining fight and conversation with Holden and just looking around and just being like, we'll deal with this tomorrow.
She's like, did we have another zombie party?
And it's a school night. So, yeah. Like, are they going to school tomorrow? Like,
Wednesday morning? Or are they going to sleep in?
I would stay home.
Yeah, I'm calling it a sick day, sorry.
So the wind's blowing, Dawn is standing and shouting, I cast you out with every prayer from every god that walks the earth or crawls beneath. She gets thrown across the room. She says, I cast you out with the strength of those who love me. I cast you out with the strength I have inside me. I cast you out into the void. Get out, get out, get out. Love it so much. And she's bleeding from her mouth. She throws the entire pot of magic dust. She shouts, that's right. Die, you bastard. And we hear the demon wailing. Blood splatters across the walls. And then the demon disappears. And Dawn collapses, whimpering. There's a bright, almost blinding white light. It's shining forward across her. And then we see Joyce standing in the living room, dressed in white. And yes, Steph, you are correct in your use of this word. She is effulgent. Are you proud?
Yes. Yes, I am. Thank you for reading it out. Thank you. She's so beautifully effulgent. It would have been so funny if the bright light was her lighting a doob. For old times
sake. I'm sure it was.
She's like, one for you, Dawn, and one for my homies.
The demon is actually the heavenly Popo.
She's like, you just cast out my dealer, but that's fine. It's no big deal. My afterlife dealer. This is what season 6 and 7 are missing. They're missing Joyce because we have nothing but endless material for this woman. Like, come on.
Truly. Truly, Stoner Joyce is my favorite meme that we've come up with on this show. I think it embodies the fluidity and flexibility of the canvas that is Buffy. This is the part of the episode that gets me. They bring Joyce back for this, and I'm just like, I can't. Like, I was just getting over you, Joyce. Like, Joyce, oh, you've just reopened all my wounds.
It's too soon. We saw her in normal again, right? It's just, and we saw her in...
Like, that was hallucination, Joyce?
Yeah.
And is this real Joyce? Like, all these ghosts of people? Like, it's too much.
Yes.
And Dawn says, Mom?
Oh, God. So Willow says, I'm gonna what? You saw my path? What do you know? What did you see? And Cassie says, you don't want to know what we saw. But if you stop completely, no more magic. And Willow's like, right, stop. But what about Giles? He made it seem like it was just as dangerous if I quit completely. Like, I'll go off the deep end again. And Cassie's like, you can't. If you do, so much as another spell. And Willow says, I tried to stop. What if I can't do this? You're telling me I'm gonna murder all my friends? I'm not strong. I'm not an Amazon. I'm just me. And Cassie says, well, there is one thing you could do to stop it, and you could see her. You wouldn't have to talk through me. And Willow stares at her, and she's like, Tara? And Cassie says, that's what you want, isn't it? So go, be with her. Everybody will be safe, and you'll be together again. It's not that bad, really. It's just like you're going to sleep. And as she's saying this, Willow's face has become super serious. She slowly stands, and she says, who are you? Ooh, this is so well done. This is so well done. So just to say it, Cassie has now suggested that Willow kill herself. Automatically, we know that's a red flag. This whole night's been a red flag. But Willow knows immediately Tara would never. She would never, right? So
yeah,
that's why.
I'm really happy that Willow clocks it. And, at that point, it's like, oh, the tables have turned. Because if Willow no longer wants to talk to this entity, And so the question then becomes, like, what is going on here, right? Like, the episode's called Conversations with Dead People. Holden is a vampire. Like, that's pretty obvious what's going on there. But was he told to chat Buffy up by somebody?
I'm really glad you brought that up. Because for me, Holden is part of this entity. We don't know the name of the entity yet. You and I speculated, but we don't know. Holden is working for the entity in some way, because remember earlier he said, it feels great, strong, like I'm connected to a powerful, all-consuming evil that's going to suck the world into a fiery oblivion. So he said that line early in the episode, and then we find out now that he knows Spike. Spike, we see him doing something in a little bit that is also very sus. So I think that the entity is just working, its fingers are on all these things, right now. This entire night has been orchestrated by it.
Yes. I guess what I'm questioning is like, how much of this is directly the entity that was talking to Spike interfering? Like, is this Cassie being told to do this by the entity? Is this the entity posing as Cassie? Like, what's going on here? Because mm-hmm. we saw the entity morphing into different people.
Yeah.
There's so many questions. So many questions. I hope that the show resolves this in the next couple of episodes. I'm just so confused. Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
it's a good thing to bring up because we will be talking about it later on. So Buffy is telling Holden, like, what do you mean? How do you know Spike? And Holden says, what do you mean how? He was the guy that, what's the word? And Buffy says, sired. Holden's like, yeah, he's the guy that sired me. And then we cut to Spike biting into the woman at her apartment. So that's what we're saying. We're saying, did the entity get to Spike, the same entity that's been talking to him all season in his head? Why isn't the chip triggering? Right? Like, unless this woman isn't human in some way, we don't know. But arguably, Spike shouldn't be able to physically do this. Now, it's very clear that he's been killing people. Holden is one of them. Oh, man. Joyce says, things are coming, Dawn. Listen, things are on their way. I love you and I love Buffy, but she won't be there for you. When it's bad, Buffy won't choose you. She'll be against you. And then Joyce fades away. Dawn screams, don't go, please don't go. And then she starts to cry. Poor Dawnielle. Like, honestly, this sucks that she went through all this work to talk to her mom and she didn't have good news for her. You know, like, she didn't, like, what she said was a warning, essentially, that Buffy won't choose Dawn in the end. And more questions about this at the very end of the episode, I think. Let's get through the rest. Andrew puts his hand on Jonathan's shoulder in the basement of the school, and Jonathan then sees Warren standing behind Andrew, and I bet that was a jump scare for him before this. And then Andrew stabs Jonathan in the gut.
Just a quick warning before we get into this final scene with Cassie and Willow, that there is kind of graphic description of dying by suicide here as Cassie sketches it out for people. So if that's not something that you want to be listening to, skip forward a minute or two.
So Cassie says, suicide thing was too far, huh? You seem so ripe. Ugh, ripe, the word. Willow says, tell me who you are. Cassie says, I stand by my opinion. The world would be a better place if you took a razor blade to your wrist. Willow says, stop. Cassie says, I can see it now. Candlelight, the Indigo Girls playing, picture of your dead girlfriend on your bloody lap. Oh, baby, you left such a big hole. It hurts so bad. You don't know hurt. This last year is going to seem like cake after what I put you and your friends through. And I'm not a fan of easy death. Fact is, the whole good versus evil thing, balancing the scales thing, I'm over it. I'm done with the mortal coil, but believe me, I'm going for the big finish. And Willow says, from beneath you it devours. Cassie says, oh, not it. Me. And then she grins and her smile warps. And she turns into, like, this creepy demon thing. And then she just fades away.
She, like, eats herself.
Yeah, she, like, ingests herself.
Her mouth unhinges and all these teeth come out. And then she, like, folds up into herself. It's a weird, twisty-turny dimensional thing.
It's creepy AF. I love it.
I don't like this scene. I don't like how it's glorifying suicide. Like, I don't think that this, I would like to say that this wouldn't be done today, but then, you know, we also have 13 Reasons Why on TV. So I don't know. But I don't like it. I think it's a cheap way to establish how evil this thing is. I guess this answers my question about, is this Cassie or is this just the entity in a Cassie suit? Like, clearly it's so it is. I guess my question is, like, is the entity also pretending to be Joyce? And, like, it can't pretend to be Holden because it can't touch other things, but, like, it was it talking directly to Holden? Because, like you said, he's connected. Like, so many questions, Steph.
Let's finish off the rest of the scenes and then we can talk about it. So, but I do agree with you. I think this was uncomfortable with the way that they described, with the way that Cassie was describing death by suicide. But I will give props to Azura Sky for her acting this episode, because I think she pulls off everything. The sympathetic ear, the voice of Tara. She always, though, had this element of being darker or, like, scheming in some way. I don't know. She pulled off this whole thing very well, and I'm impressed. So the last couple of shots happen as a montage. The song at the beginning of the episode starts to play again. So it's like bookending the episode. We get a shot of Dawn sitting by herself in the destroyed living room. We see a shot of Jonathan's dead body bleeding out over top of the seal as Andrew and Warren watch. We see a shot of Spike throwing down the woman's body, assuming he just murdered her. We see a shot of Buffy dusting Holden. Like, we just see dust explode in front of her, and she's looking very serious. The end. So let's kind of go through this from the beginning. The shot of Dawn in the living room sitting. As you're saying, I think that the entity has its fingers, its evil fingers, in everything having to do with this episode. Is Joyce the entity? Now, this is the hardest question of the entire episode, because unlike the other manifestations of dead people that we've seen, this is a very physical confrontation.
It wasn't really a conversation.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, not only was Joyce effulgent and glowing, but there was the demon, right, that we actually saw and we heard, plus all the blood smattering and all the destruction of all, like, turning well, on.
But
the
maybe
TV.
This entity could, like, hire a demon off, like,
yeah,
demon, right, like DoorDash demon. It's just like, hey, show up to this house and cause some mayhem for me.
And I know someone's going to write it in and tell us, but I'll just say it now. Somewhere in DVD commentary, somewhere the writers confirmed that it is the entity. The whole Joyce thing is an entity. And it's hard for people to believe it because it is so inconsistent with what we've seen of the entity so far and its powers. But I kind of am leaning toward what you're saying here, Kara. I think that the entity is a trickster and definitely had a demon help it out to create a show. Why? Well, let's get to that in a second. So Jonathan getting killed by Andrew. Again, you and I were saying Andrew's been kind of wormy. We're not liking Andrew a lot. Well, now I'm kind of pissed at Andrew. Did I love Jonathan? No, but I thought he was very, very cruel here. I mean, murder itself is cruel, but the fact that he had to belittle Jonathan's positive thinking earlier, right, by being like, no one cares about you, and then he stabs him to death, that's really dark. Like, that's really morbid, you know? Again, we've already asked these questions about Spike, right? Why doesn't his chip work? If he can, like, can he kill humans now? What's the point of him getting a soul if he's just gonna continue on this path of being a vampire?
And it's so interesting to me that Spike, as a souled vampire, has now sired Holden. I don't know if he's siring this other woman or if he's just biting her. Wouldn't it be intriguing if the vampires sired by a souled vampire got to keep their souls?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that's not what's going on here, but I just had that thought in the back of my head. I'm just like, like, a souled vampire is siring soulless vampires. So fascinating.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting, because it's not like Angel really does it, right? Yeah, there's a lot of questions coming up with Spike. I'm sure we'll get to it in the next episode or two, because Buffy now knows that it's Spike. And I'm sure she's not just going to go home. She's probably going to go confront it, right? As she should. I do feel like Holden was such a good character. I would have liked to see him stick around, just like Cassie. I would have liked to see Holden stick around for a little bit longer, maybe as a cool, like, sidekick character. I think the idea of, like, you know, a vampire being a therapist at the same time is, like, really interesting to me. So when we think about all of these conversations with dead people, the entity has been puppeting everybody around, including Holden. So I think that it spent all season whispering to Spike, like, molding Spike's brain like putty. And maybe that's why he's doing what he's doing. Maybe this entity also has affected Spike's chip in some way. But I think it makes a lot of sense for the entity to come after Spike and Willow personally. Clearly, it sent some sort of demon to scare off Dawn in some way. But the fact that it spoke directly to Willow and it's been speaking directly to Spike makes sense, because they are Buffy's strongest allies in a lot of ways. The fact that the entity's not even bothered with Xander. Xander's not even in the episode. Speaks volumes to me.
The entity's just, one of the entity's minions is just like, so boss, do you want to pay a visit to Xander? And the entity's just like... Who?
What?
Or did Xander get a visit? He's just not in the episode. Are he's we just gonna find out about next it. Week that he had just a totally normal conversation with Jesse?
Yeah, Jesse. He's like, well, I just thought that was we played video games. clearly, the entity got to Andrew because Andrew's weak minded. It got to Spike over time because Spike's now committing murders, but it didn't get to Willow this time. And like you can tell that it's recalibrating. It's like, oh, the suicide thing was too far, huh? So it doesn't know quite how to get to Willow yet, but it made an attempt, its first attempt, which I find fascinating, right? And then so that leaves the question as to why the entity decided to attack Dawn the way she did, with the way it did. I don't know if you have a thought about that, Kara, but like I'm thinking it makes sense to go after Dawn because Dawn is probably emotionally the closest person to Buffy, and to break Dawn down emotionally and bring the mother into the situation to warn her against Buffy. I kind of see the play here. It's not very clear though, because there was so much exorcist going on, you know?
I think Dawn needed to fight before she'd listen to Joyce's message.
Have to fight to hear what she has to say, right?
Yeah. If Joyce had just showed up all glowy, I think Dawn might have been more skeptical because she's been warned, mm-hmm. right? She's getting savvy. She knows that things aren't always as they appear. So I think just like the entity knew to approach Willow, not as Tara, but as Cassie, and be like, yeah, you don't deserve to talk to Tara, right? She's feeling guilty. And if Tara had showed up to her, that maybe would have been a red flag. Similarly, right, the entity didn't directly talk to Buffy, but instead just kind of like influenced Holden to psychoanalyze Buffy, just put the right soulless vampire in Buffy's path. And by the same token, the entity's like, okay, how am I going to really get under Dawn's skin? Well, Dawn's whole thing this season is, I want to be part of the Scoobies. I want to be involved. I want to be fighting. And so the entity's like, I'm going to give you what you want, and then you can talk to your mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what's the mom say? Once again, the mom doesn't say anything great. She says, Buffy's going to turn on you. So planting that seed of doubt in Dawn for how much she can trust her sister, that's evil plotting right there. And then on top of all this, the entity has been whispering to Andrew and clearly developing a plan with Andrew, because it was very clear that out of the two of them, Andrew was the one that's more susceptible to being manipulated. And getting the two of them back to Sunnydale, to the seal, uncovering the seal, and then clearly it needed blood. It needed somebody to bleed out on top of the seal. Why? I guess we'll find out. But this entity has been working double time at the Double Meat Palace. Like this entity pulls double shifts because it's working really, really hard. It's making itself known. So who is your hero?
I don't know, because this is not really a kind of episode where there's a lot of like conflict happening to the Scoobies. I think all three of the Scoobies featured in this episode stand up and, you know, ultimately deal with this assault in a way that works for them, right? Willow realizes that she's being tricked and she stands up for herself. Dawn fights back against this creature that she thinks is stopping her from seeing her mom. Buffy, you know, she does her thing. She slays the vampire. I think they're all my heroes.
Aw, that's a really good way to put it. I picked Dawn. she's so young. She's been through so much in her life, and to see her just stand up, use dark magic she does it every day, and all in the name of talking to her mother or freeing her mother from whatever trouble she thinks she's in. Good for you, Dawn Bon Jovi.
All right, we have a hot stake from Gloria about
Gloria, Gloria, don't you think you're falling? Sorry, that's such a good song.
Very good. Long time listener, first time caller, says Gloria. Thanks for writing in, Gloria.
Hey.
She says, wondered if Cassie's heart condition could be, one, connected to her clairvoyant abilities, as that would surely both directly cause a lot of stress, and the social exclusion she experiences does too. And two, I thought it was the typical every superhero needs a weakness trope, as being as gifted as she is would make her far too powerful. Just felt the need to share this.
So Gloria is obviously referring to the episode Help when you and I, Kara, were discussing Cassie and whether I think what we thought about her supernatural ability, like the fact that it's a mystery. Do we like it? Do we not like it? So Gloria is just filling in those holes. I like this because I think this whole idea of like power balance and everything makes sense. Like if she's given this very powerful gift, like surely there's got to be a drawback. Maybe it's early death.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I really appreciate this speculation. Yeah, I hadn't considered that when we were talking about the episode and I was a little bit unsatisfied with how things resolved with Cassie. Yeah, maybe we were just saying again, right? Less is more. Maybe we could have seen a little bit more in this case from the episode. All right. Well, that was our last episode 7 of Buffy.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
I know. But yeah, we still have most of the season to go. We still have exciting things coming up. You know,
we're 15 very close. Episodes left.
Yeah, very close to our 3rd anniversary coming out soon. And lots of fun stuff happening, listeners. So thank you for being here on this journey with us, especially our Buy Me a Coffee supporters, including our chosen ones, Emma, Kyle, Destiny, Erica, Allison, Jace, Haley, Tasha, Ricky, Amy, Rochelle, Laura, and Bahia.
Holly, Kayla, Jordan, Julian, Nicola, Louise, Joshua, Reese, Susanna, Jasmine, Christy, Kimmy, and Lauren. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next week. Bye. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Girls. If you want and can afford to donate, head on over to buymeacoffee.com/prophecygirls for one-time and monthly options.
You can also visit prophecygirls.ca/store to view all of our merch and rep the podcast on a sweatshirt, mug, sticker, or more.
We appreciate all of your support, even if it's just spreading the word about us or enjoying our show week by week.
We also invite you to join in the discussion by messaging us on our social media channels.
Follow us at Prophecy Girls Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy_Girls on Twitter.
You can also email us at prophecygirlspodcast@gmail.com or visit our website, prophecygirls.ca, where you can find the link to our Discord.
Praise Moloch.
See you next week.